Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
Welcome aboard. It's the 3-hour Gamma Ray Gala. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border, Anchorage to Atlanta, Georgia to Jonesboro, Kalamazoo, and Waterloo. We are on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. How's everybody doing today? Thanks so much for joining us. I personally have a little bit more pep in my step than normal today. And I'm usually pretty damn peppy around here.
Aw, I love the da.
And I'll tell you why. Today, tonight, is the official kickoff of the college football season.
So many different emotions on so many different levels.
We've got a full slate of games tonight, including 4 different ranked teams in action this evening. And so today's DA show is all over it. I've got the tasty top 5 returning this morning on the show. Every week, I give you my 5 favorite college football matchups, the 5 games you got to be watching in ascending order. So I'll do that. The return of the tasty top 5 this morning. We'll do that later on in this hour. Also, Yogi Roth is going to join us. He's one of our favorite college football analysts. He works for the Pac-12 networks, and we've got a big one in the Pac-12 as one of the favorites in the conference. The Oregon Ducks will take on Auburn in this weekend's biggest and most premier matchup of the college football landscape. And what to expect from the Ducks and Heisman hopeful Justin Herbert, a guy who could be the number 1 overall NFL pick in April. We'll talk to Yogi about that coming up at hour number 3. Also, next hour, we will discuss, I'll give you my thoughts on who the most likely party crasher is to the college football playoff. Also this morning, more evidence that the Texans, without a GM, by the way, have totally screwed up the Jadeveon Clowney situation. We'll also look at the Sean Rodriguez saga in Philadelphia as a guy that has become persona non grata. And there's many of those. He's just the latest in the city of brotherly love. He's trying to walk it back. We'll get back. And also, one current NFL player says Carly Lloyd in the NFL is a big mistake. All of that coming up this morning on the DA. And today, we shall do better.
We got to do better, DA.
So here's your phone number. You can dial us up on any of those topics or any others at 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. On Twitter, DA on CBS. With the kickoff of college football tonight, there's been one overriding storyline coming into the season. Is college football worse because of the dominance of Clemson in Alabama? because it feels like we are inevitably set up for Clemson-Bama part four in a national championship game, part five in the playoff altogether. The people feel as though there's no drama in this year's college football season, that everybody is simply chasing Bama and Clemson, and nobody will chase them down. So is it true coming into this season that college football is actually worse off because of the overwhelming dominance of these two programs? I am here to poke a hole in that balloon. It is where we begin. Your cold open.
Game week, finally. It's a fun time of year. We're certainly ready to kick it off and get back out on the field. We actually went out under the lights last night, which was pretty cool. Preparing for an 8 o'clock kick.
You guys are getting me fired up. You better be careful on this one, buddy. You might want to just pass that thing on down the road.
I don't believe it.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
I don't think so. That's, of course, Dabo Swinney and Nick Saban. I don't think that Clemson-Bama is bad for college football at all. Number one, how can you criticize the building of a dominant program? It is supremely hard to do what Bama and Clemson are doing. Now, granted, they both have some inherent advantages that other schools might not. They're both in highly recruited regions of the country with really good high school talent. They are in football crazy, football mad states. And that allows them to have deep pockets and big donors and good resources and the impetus to win at everything. Things that other schools in other parts of the country don't have. But Nick Saban and Dabo Swinney have created programs that are thoroughly dominant because those two guys never take a day off, and they've done it two totally different ways. You see, I think that actually the dominance of Bama and Clemson's fun for college football because they are not mirror images of one another. There's been so many assistant coaches from out and under the Nick Saban coaching tree that programs have tried to find the next Nick Saban. Dabo Swinney's not the next Nick Saban. Even though he's an Alabama kid, does not mean he's a Nick Saban disciple. He's not a disciple. He's not a chip off that block. He does it a totally different way. He's a younger, more excitable, more market-heavy type of coach, one that's better suited probably for the next generation of players than Nick Saban, who's much more old school. But either way, those two programs, to me, build interest because you have an A and a B. I think it's a problem when it's just Alabama, but as long as you have somebody that can challenge Alabama, then you know, and Clemson has done so in picking them apart last year in the national championship game, that once you get to a title, it's not that the title's a foregone conclusion, it is that the two teams that could play for a title could be. But I'll also tell you this. That both of these teams, I believe, will have a loss at some point this season. Now, they can overcome a loss because what we've seen is even a loss, a college football playoff committee is not going to ding them too hard because they are Clemson and Alabama. But I think they will both be handed a regular season loss this year. I'll tell you this, from an SEC standpoint, there used to be years where we said, God, nobody is anywhere near Bama's class. That's not the case anymore. Georgia is right there with Alabama. Now, they don't play in the regular season, but they would play in the SEC championship game like last year. And had Tua not gotten hurt, Georgia would have won that SEC championship game. Jalen Hurts' mobility was the difference maker late in that game for the comeback win. Georgia's right there. And Kirby Smart is a chip off the old block when it comes to Nick Saban and his coaching tree. But also, everybody knows that Texas A&M is a lurking giant with Jimbo Fisher there in the state of Texas. And for LSU, while Ed Orgeron doesn't sound at the podium like he is one of these college football brainiacs, LSU is poised to do damage as well because they've got talent top to bottom on that roster. And so this year alone, and that's not even counting the Iron Bowl for Alabama, which is always a brutal game that Auburn can win, you've got three games in the SEC's regular season that could definitely tip against Alabama, and then an SEC championship game hypothetically against a Georgia that's very difficult as well. It's a much easier path for Clemson. And the ACC is nowhere near what SEC is. But I also don't believe that Clemson is unbeatable in the ACC regular season. I think it's a program that knows how good it is, has a ton of talent, but did have massive defensive defections and has a quarterback that was great. Don't get me wrong, but it's not like Trevor Lawrence is immortal. I mean, he's only going to be a sophomore this year, and Clemson could easily be toppled by one of the games, like going to the Carrier Dome at Syracuse this year in the regular season, and take a loss and then have to be perfect the rest of the way. On top of this, if you have programs chasing Bama and Clemson's perfection, that's good. That's good in college football. And I'll also say this. It's the only problem with college football in terms of the dominance of Clemson and Alabama is that there's not a wider net for the college football playoff. If there was a 16 playoff or an 18 playoff, then it feels different if you've got two monster programs standing there at the end. Then at least you knew you had more chairs at the table, that you had more doors open for party crashers, and if Bama and Clemson were still there at the end, so be it. They would have beaten the teams to get there. The problem is because the party is so selective, because there are so few opportunities to get into the party, it does, I'm sure, make some fan bases believe, well, we don't stand a chance here. What are we playing for anyway? And I would say Clemson and Alabama's dominance actually helps us get closer, inch closer to a wider college football playoff, because the reason the college football playoff exists now is that there was an exhaustion of the SEC dominance. And when Alabama and LSU played twice in a season, finally, everybody around the country said, the power brokers that make things run in college football said, well, we can't just have an SEC party every year. We can't just have two SEC teams every single year. That's not fair, so we've got to have a playoff, because the BCS championship game can't just be a replay of an SEC game. I think this dominance of Clemson, Alabama is forcing the power brokers to inch closer to opening up the door to a 16 playoff. Two teams would have a bye, hypothetically, or an 18 playoff, because they don't want to just have Bama, Clemson at the end. So these are not bad things for college football. I don't buy into the idea that the Tigers and the Tides dominance is somehow bad for the sport. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, and on Twitter, DA on CBS. On college football, I'll give you my tasty top five as college football begins in earnest tonight. My top five games of the weekend counted down. But when we come back, a baseball story, a Philadelphia story, a booing story. How bad does a player deserve to get criticized when he calls out the fans? And is Sean Rodriguez trying to walk it back because he knows he can't win this fight? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
A surge protector. You're about to be zapped.
Permission to board the
mothership. Permission granted.
Now I'm on the mothership with the captain, driving to on a voyage unknown.
That's right.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
A voyage unknown. Welcome. I can't promise you safety. Hopefully, I can promise you a beer, some sports talk, and a few laughs along the way. Here is your phone number this morning for a Thursday edition of the DA, 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. And on Twitter, DA on CBS. Coming up, we've got your Tasty Top 5, my top 5 college football matchups of the opening weekend. Last weekend was week 0 in college football. This weekend is week number 1. A little reminder, programming-wise, college football will be all over it this fall with Sunday morning football. Sunday morning football returns next weekend, week 1 of the NFL season. We have moved it 1 hour later, 10 until noon Eastern time. So I'll use that show, as we always do, season number 4 of Sunday morning football, to break down what happens on college football Saturdays, and then also preview what's going to happen on NFL Sundays. That's Sunday morning football returning next weekend, and it's all of these same CBS Sports Radio stations, as well as all the same places you listen to CBS Sports Radio on your phone, on your computer, on Sirius XM Channel 6, Channel 206, and plenty of other places. Plus, it's available in podcast form. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. And it's brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way that you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. I don't think Philadelphia is a bad sports town. I don't think they're bad sports fans. Sound the alarm. I think it's just kind of a convenient narrative that they get, because it's easy to earmark them as rowdy, rambunctious, Neanderthal, barbaric, aggressive fans. But I don't think in any way that it's a bad sports town or an ugly sports town. In fact, I like sports fan bases that don't take anything for granted. I like the ones, I like the fan bases that aren't just happy-go-lucky all the time. Oh, this is so nice. This is so fun. Yeah, it's okay. They're trying their best. No, I like an expectation that you must win. I like an expectation that you must produce. I like an expectation that has a little salt there, because it means it matters, and it matters a lot. And maybe it's because I've seen fan bases that kind of couldn't care less, and bandwagon fan bases do nothing for me. Oh, wow. Suddenly you're a Warriors fan, or you were a Heat fan when LeBron was there. Oh, wow, you're a Patriots fan suddenly, but you live in Atlanta. That does nothing for me. Give me the fans that have been there through the ugly times, and they've been miserable and kicking the wall and smashing their phone, and that to me is refreshing. So, no, I don't think that Philly fans are somehow an ugly, terrible fan base. Do I think that there are ugly, terrible fans in the fan base? Yeah. But you can say that about a lot of fan bases. A lot of them. Is there a quicker trigger to boo and be miserable in Philadelphia? Yeah, there is. I think that's an honest assessment. I think in Philadelphia, because of an East Coast edge that towns like Boston and New York and Philadelphia have, I think that that's natural. I think there's an angst in these cities of ours where, for whatever reason, maybe because it's congested, chaotic, hard to move around, it's old media, it's old curmudgeons, the weather's tough, the weather could be miserable, taxes are high, real estate's high, cost of living's high. Yeah, maybe all those things just factor into this part of the country being just a little saltier. Well, a lot saltier than a lot of other places. It's just not an easy of a life. You know, it's just not. It's just not an easy life. So, I think that factors in. But you know, I've always felt like booing, so what? So what? Now, the Andrew Luck situation's different because, well, the booing itself, I don't have anything against actual booing, literally. I think that the reason for booing and the target of booing is stupid. That booing Andrew Luck was ultimately stupid because he's been the best player on your team. He's lived up to every expectation.
and it's not his fault his body broke down and he got booed. I thought that was stupid. But booing in general, I have no problem with. Sean Rodriguez, though, has a real problem with it. And Sean Rodriguez, the other day, after a walk-off home run, chastised Phillies fans who booed him and his teammates. And when Sean Rodriguez called the Philadelphia Phillies fans entitled, oh, you could imagine how that went down in Philly.
Well, think about it. Who's looking bad and feeling entitled when you hear stuff like that? I'm asking you.
I don't know. What do you mean?
I'm not the one booing. I'm not the one screaming. I'm not the one saying pretty disgusting things at times. That seems pretty entitled. I mean, you're just making yourself look pretty bad as an individual, as a person, as a fan. You're making guys not want to basically sit there and say, hey, they're going to support you. Hey, they're going to do this. That's tough. But there's still a lot of good fans, though. And those are the ones I hear. Those are the ones I pay attention to. The few that might be behind home plate to say, hey, Sean, keep doing your thing. Don't worry about it. Things are coming around. Hey, Reese. Hey, so-and-so. Hey, Bryce. Through the thick and thin, that's when you really get to show your true colors.
All right, so that was Sean Rodriguez's comments. After he hits a game-winning home run, he decides to call out the fans. What Sean Rodriguez is guilty here is of two things. Number one, not being good enough to criticize the fans. And number two, bad timing. That's it. He's just not good enough to be the guy to rip the fans. But if this is a guy that's producing and he wants to rip the fans for saying ugly things or being overly negative or what have you, I think that's fine. I think it's fine, but Sean Rodriguez just isn't good enough to do that. He picked a really bad time to do it. You know, your team just wins a walk-off. You're in a playoff chase for a wild card. You're the one that hits the walk-off, and you decide at that moment you're going to wag your finger at the fans. Ultimately, what he said, I don't really have a problem with. Sean Rodriguez essentially says, you know, the fans that are saying nasty things to us as we walk up to the plate, I'm not here for that. I don't like it. Nobody likes it. But the people that are supporting us, even through slumps and losses, what have you, we support those guys. It's just the timing. That message is not a bad message. It's the timing. Now, of course, the city just unloaded on Sean Rodriguez. And Sam Rubinoff, one of our diaper D-aliens, in for Pete the Body Velotti this week, was actually at that game on Monday. As Rodriguez steps to the plate, was he being booed because he was in the slump?
No, on Monday night, I didn't notice anything for him, but I could tell every time Harper and Hoskins come up, something builds in the crowd, and as soon as they get out or they ground out or something that's not a fly ball deep to the outfield that maybe gets the warning track or gets 300 feet, they get booed. The two of them...
Now, Hoskins has been in a terrible slump all season long. For Bryce Harper, they've been booing Bryce Harper?
All year. I went to games beginning of the year. Now, when he strikes out, he gets booed. They both came up, bomb of the ninth inning that game, tie game. Both had the bases loaded, and they both were retired. I believe Harper struck out. Hoskins was like a pop out, and they both got booed in that ninth inning, too.
So a nice honeymoon for Bryce Harper in year one of 13 seasons in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. They let him have it. I think I went to a game mid-May, and he 0-4 with 0-4, three strikeouts. By the second K, all over him. All over him.
Which, you know, I don't know. Yes, all right, it's year number one. They were supposedly in love with him in the first week of the season, but I can't kill Phillies fans for this. But really, Sean Rodriguez is just guilty of bad timing, right? Because once you hit the walk-off, that's not the time to be reprimanding the fans.
No, you're a good guy right now. You just won them the game.
You're
keeping them in the playoff hunt. You're keeping pace with the Mets and the Nationals and the other teams, especially now that the Mets have lost five in a row. You got to realize, hey, we just won a game, and then they went on to win the next couple nights as well. We're winning now. Maybe handle this at a different time when you're not the guy hitting the walk-off.
Right. So basically now Sean Rodriguez is trying to walk it back, because last night he said, I mean, I wasn't trying to insult anybody with what I said. I'm very similar to the Philly fan base. I'm a very passionate person. I'm a passionate player. I show up every day. I don't leave anything in the tank. I honestly think it was just me trying to promote love over hate. There's a lot of things going on in the world and in life. I'm not saying that baseball can't help distract us from that, because that's a good thing. That's what we need as people sometimes. We need distraction just to get us in a better place, or at least just to allow our emotions just to feel a little bit better. That was the message I was going for, and it definitely wasn't to offend them. Yeah, that's kind of a weak sauce walk back here. I was trying to promote love over hate. I mean, you called the fans entitled. You said basically it was an ugly look for them. I don't know if I'm buying the love over hate explanation. You know, I think if you're Sean Rodriguez, what you just say is, you know, my timing was bad. My timing was bad. But overall, my message is consistent. You know, you guys expect too much. We're out here busting our ass. And we're getting killed. We're getting booed when we're trying to do our very best. It's not like we're loafing. It's not like we're lazy. We're trying. Fine. You know, the love over hate thing, Bogish. I don't think anytime you're promoting love over hate, that's going to go over very well with the fan base in Philadelphia.
No, I think my laugh might have been audible when you read his quote a second ago. I mean, that's just never going to fly and not really what he was doing. He was asking for them to be nice to the professional athletes in Philadelphia, which is never going to happen.
You know, Cole Hamels and Jason Wirth have both spoken about this, and they're like, yeah, we all got booed, and we won a World Series.
Right.
We won a World Series in 08. In 09, Cole Hamels was being booed.
Yeah.
Jason Wirth became the enemy of the state once he went to Washington.
Yeah, you don't, they're not going to throw batteries like they did at J.D. Drew. But, I mean, booing
well,
is...
They might.
But booing... trying to be nice. Booing is booing. There is a line you can't cross in terms of, you know, what you're going to say to a particular player. And maybe you want to lay off until they do something bad. But when you're Rhys Hoskins and you're hitting 160 whatever since the All-Star break and you drop an easy throw that should have ended an inning the right and led to a loss, I mean, you got to just kind of take whatever you get that's a nice, normal, run-of-the-mill boo from Philadelphia and not tell me how I'm entitled.
When we come back here on the show, your tasty top five. We've got my five favorite games of the opening college football weekend counted down in tastiest order. Oh, I want something just
like this. Muffins, mornings, mothership.
How you doing, brother DA? I love listening to your show every morning, man. You know, you're the man of truth.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
That's right, the man of truth.
Oh, okay.
DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for joining us every single morning, Monday through Friday, 9 until noon Eastern Time, 6 until 9 Pacific. We got you locked in right here on CBS Sports Radio and the DA Show and Sunday Morning Football available across this great CBS Sports Radio network. You can do so by listening to us on all these wonderful affiliates, terrestrial radio on CBS Sports Radio, also Sirius XM Channel 206 is the place to get your DA Show and CBS Sports Radio. And also on your phone, you can watch us at watchda.com or stream us at radio.com, Apple Music, and other places radio is streamed. Just tell your smart speaker to stream or play CBS Sports Radio. Coming up here on the DA Show next hour, did the Texans royally screw up the Jadeveon Clowney situation? We shall discuss. Also, Yogi Roth is going to join us, Pac-12 Networks, as the Pac-12 and college football gets underway tonight for week number one of the season. YT tweets, DA, I live just outside of Philly. You could not be more wrong about these fans. I could give you countless firsthand experiences that would turn your stomach. Example. Well, I can't read that, but it's. No, that's. I can't read that. Look, am I saying every fan in Philadelphia is a great, diplomatic, mature fan? Of course not. Am I saying there are some ugly incidents? Yes. Yes, I admit there are. And I am not going to applaud being gross in public and being smashed and aggressive and fighting and throwing things and saying lewd comments. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in that at all. I'm just saying there's bad apples in a lot of fan bases, in every fan base. And, I mean, look, college football has its fair share of really rugged, bad behavior fans in a lot of places. So I just think that, you know, Sean Rodriguez, with his comments about Philly, it was just really bad timing. It was not the place nor the time, and he just wasn't good enough to do it. But I also don't think that this whole thing about, oh, Philly's so unfair, Philly treats you so much worse than everywhere else, it's impossible to be, you know, to be loved in Philadelphia. I think that that's overblown. B Squared tweets, wait, so the fans booed Andrew Luck? I find that sick and disgusting. Signed, Eric Winston. Robin the 321 tweets, I'm a Detroit Tigers fan, Lions, Pistons, and Red Wings fan in Florida. I've been lucky with the Red Wings, but look at rough times my teams have. 0-16. Well, what gets worse than that? Aaron tweets, my daughter asked today, Dad, why do you listen to sports radio? I said, when you don't like any of the music on the radio, all you have to choose from is news or sports, and it's always bad news. Hashtag beam me up. I think that's a pretty good way to frame things. Now, I think the news is important, but almost only from your respected news outlets. I think cable news is just trash on all sides of the political spectrum, and it's a really dangerous, toxic moat. But, yeah, news is really depressing these days. Really depressing. So I would choose us too. Basically, that's why I think you should listen, because at least we're not depressing. That's the baseline that I have for every show. Well, Mraz's grasp of general knowledge, geography, science, and life in general is very depressing. The show, my baseline is just don't have a depressing show. Let's try to put on 3 hours that doesn't make people want to drive off the side of the road. If we can do that, then we've at least been better than the news. All right, it is time for the return of your tasty top five, my five favorite matchups in college football this weekend.
Every week, DA gives you his most appetizing college football games.
This is a tasty burger.
It's the tasty top five.
I'm tasty.
Every week, I'm going to give you the games. The five games I'm most looking forward to, where they are, what time they are, and how to watch them. And so let's start with number five. Number five is the defending national champion Clemson Tigers, who will play tonight at home against Georgia Tech. Now, this line is enormous. It's 35.5, but it's also on a brand new network. This game's going to be on ACC Network, so this is the first game that you'll have to be able to watch, and maybe there's some cable providers that still don't have the ACC Network, but let's see what Clemson looks like coming out of the bag defending their national championship. I mean, is Trevor Lawrence going to throw for 5 touchdowns tonight? Is Clemson going to win that easily by 5 touchdowns? Or is this going to be, because there is no preseason in college football, and this is a conference game, is this a matchup where Clemson could look a little rusty, a little clunky? That is definitely possible tonight. So watching where Clemson is, to me, is interesting. That's my number five matchup of the weekend. Number four matchup to watch, and that, by the way, is a kickoff of 8 p.m. Eastern time tonight. Number four matchup comes to us from Orlando. That is also tonight. This one's going to be on the CBS Sports Network, where number 17 UCF will take on A&M at Spectrum Stadium in Central Florida. Now, this is interesting because if there is a group of five matchup, a group of five team, rather, that can crash the party, the group of five team that's going to do so is UCF. Remember, their quarterback and leader, Mackenzie Milton, last year was injured in a gruesome leg injury on the field, and people don't know whether he'll ever play football again. He wants to, but there's a doubt that he'll ever be able to. So who steps in for UCF, the annual Group of Five party crasher? Brandon Wimbush. Why does that name sound familiar? Well, he was Notre Dame's quarterback. So Notre Dame's former quarterback, starting quarterback, is now at UCF, and they start the season ranked in the top 20. I think the Golden Knights, with what they've built down there and Josh Heupel as head coach, needs to be taken seriously, and they should run roughshod over Florida A&M. But a chance for you to see tonight the Brandon Wimbush era when it comes to the UCF Golden Knights. Your number three tastiest matchup of the weekend is going to happen tomorrow night. You'll be able to watch it on ESPN. This is a 7 p.m. Eastern kick. And that's number 19, Wisconsin at USF. Now, everybody's been talking about Michigan, and this is Michigan's season, and Michigan needs to get over the hump, and this is the year that they finally get to a college football playoff. But Wisconsin is once again one of the best teams in the Big Ten, and this is not an easy matchup for them. You know, this is a matchup where you can easily go on the road, sweaty, rainy, wet, thunderstorm-laden Florida in early September or late August and just be winded by the time the third quarter rolls around. USF is a 12-point underdog in this game, but it's going to be hot and steamy and in the 90s with thunderstorms. And we know the whole hurricane that's rolling through the Caribbean. I just feel like that's one of those games that Wisconsin is going to be happy just to get out with a win. And I know it's a double-digit game. I just don't feel like this is an easy win by Wisconsin anyway. So watch that tomorrow night, Wisconsin number 19 at USF. My number two tastiest matchup of this week, it actually happens very early in the season for this matchup, but something that tonight I think is going to be the best game of the night, and that's going to be Utah-BYU, the Holy War in Provo, Utah. It's a number 14-ranked Utah Utes team that might be the best team of the Pac-12. I mean, this is a dark horse in the Pac-12 to win the conference, but this is always one of the most intense matchups and rivalries of the year, and Utah's going to go on the road for this. Now, they can lose tonight. This one's going to be a 10:15 Eastern kick, 7:15 Pacific on ESPN. So the entire nation, you can watch this game. But Utah can lose this game and still win the Pac-12, but this is a pretty good early marker. I mean, this is a kind of a brutal game to play in week number one if you've got designs on winning the Pac-12. And Utah's a top 15 team of the country, but you know, this is one of those rivalries where it's always tightly contested, tightly battled. And for Utah to start the season on the road, they're only a 6-point favorite in this game. So Vegas believes it's going to be a one-score game. I believe it's going to be a one-score game as well. This is the game of the night, Utah-BYU tonight. A lot of interesting storylines baked into such a heavy rivalry game in week number one. And your number one matchup of the weekend is easy. This one is the only matchup of two ranked teams, number 11 Oregon and number 16 Auburn. And this is coming up over the weekend from Arlington, Texas and Jerry World. And this one is going to be on Saturday night. Now, they're going to play this at 7:30 Eastern time kick. And for both teams, we get to see what they really are. I mean, Justin Herbert comes back. He returns to be the starting quarterback at Oregon, and the question is he going to live up to the hype? Herbert was really good last year, but now everybody's eyes are on him. He could be the number one pick in the NFL draft. I think Oregon's the best team of the Pac-12, but this is a huge matchup because we always know that an SEC team versus a Pac-12 team, it's kind of physicality versus finesse, and most people expect that Auburn is the tougher team, the heavier team, the team that's going to grind down the finesse Oregon Ducks. But with Mario Cristobal at Oregon, they're not really built to just be finesse anymore. Auburn's only a field goal favorite, 3 or 3.5. This should be a really good test for both of them. And I applaud both of them because we should applaud more top 20 matchups right out of the gate. So many teams take the week off, and here's Auburn and Oregon slinging at it. I mean, Alabama's playing Duke. That should be a 30-point win for Alabama. But Auburn is playing a top 15 team. Oregon's playing a top 20 team right out of the chute. This one's going to be a dandy. That's the number one matchup for me to watch this college football weekend. That is your Tasty Top 5. I'll do that every week as we lead into the college football weekend. Here is your phone number, 855-212-4CBS. And on Twitter, DA on CBS. Now, the Houston Texans Don't want Jadeveon Clowney. Do want Jadeveon Clowney. Want to trade Jadeveon Clowney. Don't want to trade him. It looks like they have messed this thing up royally. We'll discuss how coming up next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.